So we've been able to have a pretty robust conversation and hearing your background from Calvin Klein to your childhood inspiration to family life, coming up in Brooklyn and how it ultimately informs the stylist that you are today. But in every episode, I like to change perspectives, right? I like to turn the table and allow the interviewee to ask the host any questions. So, Sebastian, what questions do you have for the kid, for me?
Taking a trip to Chicago real quick. One important, I guess, retailer for me was RSVP Gallery, which I'm pretty sure originated in Chicago, if I'm correct. So, and that was Virgil and Don C, right?
Correct.
So, just for you as a Chicago native, what did that kind of boutique do for the city, for the kids there, and your generation, and just for you personally?
RSVP Gallery, I'm just going to break it down to you. In high school, that was the place. I mean, I spoke earlier about just being niche, right, in that first Top Man purchase. I think RSVP should be in lieu of Top Man because come on now. And looking at that, I mean, it was just access, right? It was access in the most candid way to the point where 2009, we weren't so far into social media, right? There was Facebook, but Instagram wouldn't come for another year or so, right? So everyone was still in their silos or in their Tumblr phase or, just kind of doing their own thing, looking at these holistic trends like skinny jeans, but looking at places like RSVP in a very meta sense. So I'll keep it high level first and get specific. It's just that one, very few places in Chicago existed, and the ones that did exist, they were very streamlined in terms of their focus. There were certain sneaker shops. There were certain t-shirt brands. There were brands like Leaders that centered more so on apparel than they did sneakers or one or the other. But RSVP was a place that just allowed everything to come together. It was like our Dover Street Market for the community, for young creatives in 2009. And to just go into that store, it was a level of, I remember my first time going into RSVP was just like, oh God, is the fit on? Like, what am I gonna wear to go to a store? Something that I would have never considered and today would never consider, because I come from a place of when you're in a room, you belong there, whether it's RSVP or the Met Gala. Like, it's the what's one and the same, but just creating that space for folks in Chicago, right, to then bring their online interests and that very niche focus to IRL, kind of find that communication between the two. But I think taking it to that second meta level is just that look at the people that started it, Don C and Virgil. I mean, two Chicago natives, like through and through Chicago. I mean, if you want to hear what a Chicago accent sounds like, just listen to any Don C interview. I'm from Chicago, and people are like, well, you don't have an accent. I'm like, yeah, I don't, but Don C. Looking at their story specifically, right? Don C, having worked in finance before, right? He'd be on the trading floor in polo and, whatever sneakers he'd had. Just to see him be able to make that transition as to one, a business owner, but two, to keep himself there, right? I think that's the real lesson in RSVP for me as a Chicagoan and as a person is just you can bring yourself and you should bring yourself with you everywhere you go and to do so fully, thoroughly, and consistently. And we see how that's paid out for Don C and looking at Virgil starting from an engineering background, coming from an immigrant family. You can see in interviews that he says, that's what he thought was that was the least he could do for his mom and dad, who immigrated to America for him, his education, their livelihood, etc. But to then go from that to architecture, from architecture to internships at Fendi and to kind of really playing a backseat for many years and being Kanye's right-hand man and creator to see where he is now. Yes, there's a Louis Vuitton, but I think more than it being a matter of him being a part of a house like LVMH, Louis Vuitton being the first black creative director in their 150 plus year history, let's get all the facts on the table. It's a matter of him realizing, right, and seeing that. And I mean, I think it's important in his story, whether you're a fan of or not a Virgil fan, it doesn't matter. It's something whereas you really see the importance of letting the work speak for itself. Coming from the Insta generation, it's like 5 minutes. Okay, I've been doing this thing for 6 months. No one's, my collection's not popping off. It's like, dude, or
6 years.
sis, it's like 6 months. Let's give it a couple years. Let's see if you're willing to persist that long because I mean that's what the greats do. That's what they have to do. And I mean, that's something that's going to be consistent, I think, no matter how many times the tide of fashion, of design, the business of fashion changes, whether we move 120% in e-commerce by 2025, which there will never be, right? Because there's that customer service element that's so important. So RSVP Gallery as a mechanism of one, being able to see Chicagoans realize their fashion dreams, right? To really get out their dreams in the most authentic way possible, but two, to look at it in a sense of business, right? And to look at what it meant for me in 2009, 10 to today even. It's a magical place.
I love that. I mean, for me, RSVP, it was always just, you know, something that existed that I never got to experience. And I'd never been to Chicago. So hearing you speak on that was really great. As far as the business of fashion, and I guess you mentioned you touched on e-commerce and then versus brick and mortar, and where do you have this view of the world, I guess, I don't know, 10, 20 years from now, where everything that Kanye and Elon Musk are doing design-wise is going to, you know, take shape and become the, you know, the popular styles, where cars are going to look more uniform and clothes are going to be more of this kind of, you know, dystopian type uniform where we are going to still have color and interesting silhouettes, but just going back to like that kind of Blade Runner aesthetic. How do you see that affecting the business of fashion? Do you think that we are going to reach a point where we enter this world of tunics and pants? Or are we still going to have, you know, the variants that we have today with endless amounts of brands and colors and silhouettes and the way that things look?
I don't think it'll be binary, right? One way or the other. I think it's going to be an amalgam, an aggregate of everything that we've seen thus far, right? And there's still going to be reference culture, right? I feel that too, fashion happens in cycles. No matter what era, what decade, there's always going to be a reference pulled because that's how art happens, you know, chicken before the egg. Something has to influence the creation, or does the creation influence the person designing it? I think they work intersectionally, interchangeably. But I think the business of fashion, and I say just looking at the macro business of design, right? I think it's going to move to a model of curation. Because I feel too, right, just as social media is as ubiquitous as it exists or as we see it today, I think at some point it's going to phase out, you know, and I know it may seem like no way right now, but we'll see. Because everything has its time. And so I think with that and everything that we've taken from it and will likely keep with us, it's going to be a level of curation and customer service that will never waver. People are going to want to see people no matter how automated our lives become. And in that, they're going to want good customer service. And that ties back into brick and mortar. You know, I think that's one thing that I see in the business of fashion that is why it isn't as successful among many global contributing factors, both micro and macro. It's just that sometimes when you go into stores, and I've not personally had this experience, but I've seen it portrayed in other instances or kind of externally in other cases or people, it's just that a lot of the assistants and the representatives in stores and the salespeople sometimes think that they're better than the consumer. You know, and I think that's just one inherent contradiction that's so deep. And it hasn't been ubiquitous, right? But I think it's really that customer service that brings people back, right? That will allow people to spend hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on a pair of indigo dyed Japanese 16 ounces of denim, you know? So I think it's just a matter of one, keeping that level of customer service there. But to my second point on curation, I think it's just going to be how we begin to curate our lives, because as social media does eventually phase out, there's going to be something that takes its spot, right? There's going to be something that, you know, similarly, if not identically, you know, hones or grasps our interest in the way that social does today. So I think that it's just going to move to a model of curation, right? How curated, how specifically do we want our lives to look, whether it's aesthetically, whether it's in our houses, whether it's, you know, if you look at certain things like Nordstrom launching their in-store resale shop, one of the first big brands to do it. And I mean, they're launching it coordinating with Fashion Week, but, you know, just looking at how to become more sustainable, like how to make sense. So I think those two, in addition to us becoming more discerning, right? I think consumers are going to continue to be discerning and show by way of their consumption habits and what they do or don't spend, how they do or don't spend, where they do or don't show up. you know, what brands will survive. And that ultimately is a brand that has to have a story.
Absolutely. Kind of have this bit of darker perspective in there. Or just, you know, we might, to some extent, lose certain things that we have today as time progresses because of other external factors. But that's just more some sort of fantastical idea that I have. Do you think it's worth investing in fashion right now? I think there's, I'm looking at just like Revolve, for example. Do you think there's potential for some sort of fashion IPO like Farfetch to become the next Apple or Tesla? Or do you think that, or do you more see fashion as kind of not necessarily graduating to that space because there's not much else it can lend to society that it hasn't already?
I think it's going to be a merge between fashion and beauty, right? I think the next IPO could be a Farfetch, right? They just recently took on a couple hundred million dollars from investors. Last week of January, it was. So, I mean, we continue to see things like that and to continue to see that they aren't unicorns, right? That they aren't here and gone, that they aren't like a WeWork. Sorry, WeWork, but it just didn't work out so well. I think if we look at that merger between fashion, between the business side of fashion, it's going to definitely be something with beauty, right? The beauty industry, because one, they go so seamlessly hand in hand with one another. But if you look at just the juggernauts of consumption, right? It is beauty, you know, looking at a $600 billion plus dollar industry, like, damn, that's a lot of beauty products. That's a lot of palettes. That's a lot of brands. That's a lot of partnerships. That's a lot of people coming on with their own. That's a lot of influencer culture, right? There are a lot of the Jackie Inas or Huda Katan, if you look at anyone across the beauty landscape. So I think it's just going to be, I think they're all going to exist in one way or another. It's just going to be who will make the smartest partnership, the most effective one. And I don't think, counter to your question, that certain entities like houses or like PVHs or tapestries will phase out, right? I think they just have to become more smart. They have to become more savvy in how they partner, right? It can't all just be, all right, let's move our marketing budget into influencer marketing. But you know, I think also you have to just look to the houses that have done it. You have to look to LVMH. Bernard Arnault is not playing games. You know? Right. So in no ways is he playing games, you know. And so with that, you just have to see, you know, and kind of follow these business models because everything comes back, as I've said time and time again. Everything's going to come back. There is, I don't think there won't ever be this catharsis where there's no more fashion houses because, you know, it's beautiful, right? It's art in its own way. It's wearable art. It's the most accessible form of art, you know? I mean, if you look lastly into like certain houses bringing back couture, right, at Balenciaga. But I think it then just becomes a question of how they strategize, right? I think strategy is the through line of all of what I'm saying here, right? How savvy are you being with your strategy? Because, you know, who are they bringing back to these couture houses? Who are the couturiers? You know, who are the designers? Who has the skill? Or have we phased out? And have all those people gone into other industries because couture just isn't what it used to be? You know, are we going to be diverse in this endeavor, right? Are we going to actually pull from talent or what we think talent looked like or should feel or should fit as it pertains to a couture house, right? So I think just understanding and keeping close at mind and at heart, you know, the transition and innovations around strategy within the business of fashion as well as the consumer. So I think just the interplay between those two and always keeping in mind, right, how history underscores it all because it will always inevitably repeat itself. It's just how smart does it or will it do in 10 years or in the future?
It's interesting to just kind of look at the bigger players. And for example, Virgil doesn't necessarily own Off-White. Off-White is owned by New Guards Group. New Guards Group is owned, or just recently owned by Farfetch.
Speak on it, man.
just realizing these things and just taking them, you know, not for surface value. I think you're right. I love what you said about beauty and that being just such a powerful force. I think partially due to just, you know, production costs. Mm-hmm. How easy is it to, you know, bottle a face cream as opposed to making a cut and sew jacket?
Right. Yeah, and I think too, it's understanding where human nature lies or falls into all of it, right? Like we're gonna wanna people will inherently compete, you know. So not who has the latest season of Dior versus not, but more so how are we gonna make ourselves look the best that we can in order to be more marketable, to make more money, to just accumulate more, because that is as human nature gets, accumulation and you know, kind of pegging yourself as to what you feel is the next or least best thing, right? And how far of a distance are you creating between the two? So that amplitude between human nature, where it is today, and how beauty amplifies that, right? And the space between, you know, human nature and how fashion enables folks to be themselves, or the best or whatever specific version of themselves. Not to get pastiche about it, but that's it. You can never discredit or discount human nature. Certain fashion forecasters look at things like we consume 90 new items a year and end up phasing out 85% of them. It's like, God damn it, how many t-shirts do you need? Like, do you need that? Like, what is it saying at that point? You know, so just tying that back to fashion as an investment, fashion should only be an investment. Period. You know, I think it should only be an investment, right? An investment doesn't mean spending a boatload on items or spending money on items that mean something, right? You know, I'm sure, or most people may not be able to kind of find that level of synergy or connection that you or I can with an item or, you know, the story behind it. Maybe it's just a functional jacket, but make sure it's a quality functional jacket. You know that if you're going to pay 30 versus 230 on a jacket, the former is not going to be around for too long, and then you're going to end up buying maybe five iterations of the same thing, you know. So invest in pieces, man. Get your pieces up. You know, that's what I tell anyone that asks me, Quayle, you know, where should I go shop? What should I buy? What should I do? Quayle, I want you to style this or that for me. It's like, what do you want to say, first and foremost? But, you know, two, what are you using it? What's going to be the utility of it, right? Fashion, I think, for me, is utility in so many different ways. And so I think making investments in that way, right? Whether it's the rare metals that you buy, like investing in rhodium, which is something that I've done recently. Like, you know, yeah, we have the historical gold standard in the United States, but rhodium has sold, you know, for the last 3 years from more than an ounce of gold has, you know, by about two and a half fold, you know. So looking at the nuances, right, and just bringing all my worlds together, culture, finance, storytelling, fashion, design, and just being able to see how to best approach them all is that's the future, right? Again, that's savvy strategy. And kind of seeing and finding your place within it, right? Taking, bringing back that human nature. What story are you telling, you know, in the clothes that you wear? Or are you kind of following a trend, which, yikes, don't do that.
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you, Sebastian. I mean, I think those questions were very timely, very pertinent to where we are culturally in our conversation, you and I, and, you know, us as our avant-garde selves being among Generation Z. And millennials. What I'll do now is transition to our last segment, Sebastian. You know, as a creative, it's often emotionally, mentally taxing to always give output at its maximum, right? Output at its apex is what I call it. You know, to create the next best storyboard, to create the next best shoot, to be able to ideate things that are original, but still you know, but still referencing the important parts of history. All that being considered, Sebastian, how do you approach self-care and the styling that you do and the work that you do and making sure that your ideas are your own, but still that they are, you know, representing what you have to represent in the work that you do?
For me, I mean, with self-care, it's just understanding that I shouldn't be trying to convince anyone that I I'm good at what I do, that I enjoy what I do. I should just kind of just, you know, create and the rest will come. Put out there what I feel will inspire others in any way, whether they're into fashion or not. Where someone who's 18 could look at the same image a 65-year-old is looking at, and they both feel something from that. It's not the same thing, just some sort of feeling. I also think it's, you know, just going back to who you surround yourself with and you decide to work with and your team, and to know that while you take it upon yourself to make this piece, this photograph or whatever it is, this video, the best that it can be, all of that input, all of that creative input doesn't have to come from you. That contribution is going to come from who's doing makeup, from the photographer's vision, from the hairstylist's vision, from your subject. So just really focusing on who's on the team and whose vision do I want to contribute to my own in efforts to create something larger than just us as individuals.
Absolutely. Sebastian, do you feel that creatives get the credit that they deserve?
I think so. I think maybe it's less in the sense that it's hyper-recognized by those on the outside, but I think there are times in the lives of many creatives where they have that moment of self-realization, of importance, where it's not so much someone telling them, but just something that happens in their day or in their life where it's an understanding that, okay, you know, I did something here. And I think that's just as powerful as being told. And maybe even if it's not credit in the sense of recognition, but it's credit in the sense that someone else imitates what you do. And they don't necessarily credit you or your name as the source, but just understanding that you had a role in that and that inspiration, whether the idea was stolen or not, is, you know, it still could be rewarding in my opinion.
Sebastian, what does that moment of self-realization look like to you? Do you perceive that will look like for you when it happens? Has it happened?
I've been trying to turn a blind eye to this sort of instant gratification of likes, you know, do a shoot, post it on my Instagram, and see how many people like it. Because for the most part, people like to see my face as opposed to what I'm doing creatively. and once you understand that, and once you become okay with that, because it is so prevalent in our culture, just likes being a direct translation to validity and so on and so forth. So I guess for me, it's doing something for the magazine that's recognized by a corporate client who wants to tap into that idea and tap into what we created as a on this organic level and bring it into their a more corporate commercial space. You know, how can you do this for us within the confines of us being a multi-billion dollar company? And, you know, maybe we can't have this model with her nipple showing, but how can we tame this down but still use your idea and your vision because we feel like it'll take our products somewhere? And I think that happening at, you know, consistent levels is where you reach the point of success in the industry.
Where to from here, Sebastian?
For me, I just, you know, I want to dig deeper into myself, become more comfortable, and I don't want to get nervous anymore before shoots. You know, there's still a bit of anxiety sometimes where I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what am I going to do here? It really just is taking that as like I'm waking up in the morning and I'm getting dressed and I have these items in here in front of me to play with, you know. This is my paintbrush. These are my colors of paint. This is my canvas. And I just need to make it work in this moment. I wanna grow and I wanna do more. I wanna work more on the business end. I would love to, you know, consult for brands. Looking to Virgil, expand what he's been able to accomplish and contribute my vision and my ideas and my, you know, my perspective, my beliefs, and not enforce them on the fashion industry, but, you know, present it to them and see where I can help it develop it and grow and become more sustainable, more socially aware, you know, be the guy on set where it's like, we probably shouldn't do that. This is not a good idea, you know, being that voice of reason and a representation of the people in these corporate spaces.
That's excellent, Sebastian. I think that's a perfect place to pause.
New Traditional will be back next week with a brand new episode featuring the flyest and one of my favorite photographers. Stay tuned.